Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly. I'm Paul Charchian, and my co-host, as he frequently is, almost every week, Brian Johnson. Hi, Brian.
What's up, Charch?
Good to talk to you again. Last week, we dove into free agency with quarterbacks and running backs. This week, we're focusing on wide receivers and tight ends. The tampering period starts Monday, so it'll be fascinating to see where these guys go, who goes early, who goes late. Man, there's a lot of wide receiver talent.
Yeah.
Hitting the market, and it's fascinating. And before we get to the wide receivers and the tight end free agents, let's mention this Cam Newton decision by the Patriots and Bill Belichick. Baffling. I'm shocked they brought him back at any price. B, at $14 million. I mean, that's starter quarterback money for a guy Bill Belichick benched four times during the season. Brian, I'm stunned by this. I've said it so many times. Belichick GM undermines Bill Belichick head coach all the time.
I have no words, really. This could just be the most Belichick thing ever, where he has lulled the rest of the AFC East into thinking they have a chance. And of course the Bills for the AFC championship, but I don't know. Is this like just like the ultimate Kaiser Soze play by Bill Belichick, bringing back Cam Newton, who he benched multiple times throughout the year.
At least three that I can think of off the top of my head. And Cam did not finish.
Who we were ripping last year through five touchdown passes or something like that.
Yeah, it was a 9 touchdown pass season, which is unfathomable. Now, here's what his apologists are saying. He had COVID. Mm-hmm. He was better before COVID than after COVID. He was never the same guy, so then he'll be further removed from COVID.
Bad receivers.
Okay, maybe
too.
Bad receivers. Yeah. And his receivers were bad.
They're fair points.
You know, the team had 10 players on their COVID opt-out list, was the most in the NFL. I think the majority were on defense. I think they had one offensive lineman. Most of that was defense. Still, it just, you know, the eye test. Look at Cam Newton. And maybe the worst part of this, there's no guarantee Cam Newton's a starting quarterback week one, but at $14 million, he's in play for it. Poor Damian Harris. I mean, it just torpedoes his fantasy value.
Yep.
That's the worst part of this.
This is right up your alley. Sign Stewbeard.
Right?
Where
if you
Ryan
need a transition,
Patrick?
If you need it, and he would know, Belichick would know better than anybody, because he's faced Stewbeard so many times. You know, if you need a transition quarterback to get you, you're the Patriots, to get you to whoever's next, whatever young kid you've decided is your next up-and-coming quarterback, Ryan Fitzpatrick, that's your guy.
They don't have an option outside of Cam. It seems like they're out on Deshaun Watson, I guess. If someone's going to trade for them, they're not going to draft one of these big-name quarterbacks.
Maybe. Higher in the draft than we ever see the Patriots. I think they're picking 9. I mean, you know, it wouldn't take a lot for them to get from, like, 9. And 9 might get them one of the big 4 quarterbacks. It might. It probably won't. But from them to get to 9 to, like, 6 to go get one, you know, is possible.
Do you think Cam Newton was the one who was most surprised by this signing?
It's got to be like, oh my God, found money.
Yeah,
I gotta believe he was prepping himself to be a backup for $2 million.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Unbelievable.
We'll see how it plays out.
All right, let's go to the free agent wide receivers.
All right.
There are a bunch of teams that have wide receiver need. I'm just going to list them off briefly. I see it. Detroit, which has... We're going to talk about all the receivers are going to free agency.
Yeah.
Detroit, Chicago, Baltimore, Houston, Indy, Vegas, Miami, New England, the Giants, the Jets, Philadelphia, Tennessee, and Washington. Alphabetically, there's your laundry list of teams that have real need at wide receiver. These are all teams that basically have got one receiver or less that they can really count on. So, given that as a backdrop, let's look at some of the available free agent wide receivers. A little background on what got them to where they are today and ideal landing spots for each of these guys. I've done all the talking so far, Brian, but I'll go first. Kenny Golladay. It's got to be the best name out of this crop, right?
Oh, yeah.
Elite-level player, potentially on a Hall of Fame pace. The Lions' decision not to franchise Golladay is a clear sign that they are in full-blown rebuilding mode again. You know, perpetually rebuilding. And it's a team that's allowing its number one, number two, and number three wide receivers from this year all to walk in free agency. Unbelievable.
They've also forced one of the greatest wide receivers of all time into early retirement in Calvin Johnson. And they also drafted like five wide receivers in the first round in the early 2000s, like multiple years. That was Matt Millen's fault, of course. But yeah, cursed at the wide receiver position, essentially.
Golladay played four full games last year. It was weeks three through six.
He was a killer.
He scored or topped 100 yards in all four of the games. He might have been the highest scoring wide receiver in fantasy football on a per game basis, you know, for his four games
up there.
And he wasn't really truly healthy for even any of those four games. He played those four games hurt. It was a hamstring injury at the start of the year and then the hip injury that knocked him out for the rest of the year after that. And it was an unfortunate season for Kenny Golladay, but he's more than proven himself as an elite receiver. I think the ideal landing spot for him is just any place with solid quarterbacking. The problem here is, though, Brian, the intersection of wide receiver needy teams with good quarterbacks and who have requisite salary cap space is very small. So here's the only teams that I think are possible landing spots. Houston with Deshaun Watson for the moment, Tennessee with Ryan Tannehill, Baltimore with Lamar Jackson, and as a sneaky one, Las Vegas, because I think Derek Carr is sneaky competent. So that's it. I think it's only four really ideal landing spots for Kenny Golladay.
The problem is Golladay, he wants top-tier wide receiver money, which he deserves.
It's good enough to get it.
But he hasn't proven to stay healthy, and that's where there's going to be a big disconnect, I feel like, in the market for teams asking price and what he's going to be willing to sign for. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if he plays 16 full games, he's got wide receiver one, you know, top 12 wide receiver ability written all over him.
In redraft leagues, I think Kenny Golladay's value here is medium-high. His current ADP is only the fourth round in early drafting, but he's got room to go way up from there if he lands in the right spot. I mean, if he goes to any place with competent quarterbacking, I think Kenny Golladay could move as high as the second round. In Dynasty, I think it's also medium-high here. He's only 27 years old, so he's really entering the prime of his career, kind of in the prime. And throughout this next contract, it'll probably be like a four-year contract. He'll be operating through the latter part of the prime of his career. So I think he's good for another three-ish years, and I think Kenny Golladay remains very valuable. Let's go to our next free agent wide receiver, Will Fuller.
Will Fuller turns 27 in April, so like Golladay, entering the prime of his career. And despite only playing 11 games in 2020, finished as wide receiver 24 on a total points basis. And he was tied for fifth in points per game because he was going off. And that included a week two against Baltimore when he was literally blanked.
Yeah.
Zero catches. Yeah. I think he might have had a target, but was just on an incredible pace. The points per game pace, he was tied with A.J. Brown for fifth, only trailed Stephon Diggs, Calvin Ridley, Tyreek Hill and Davante Adams.
It's good company right there.
Very good company. But as we all know, his season was cut short because of the PED suspension.
Yep.
And before this year, Golladay had some trouble staying on the field.
Fuller, but yes.
Fuller, yeah, my bad. Played 11 games in 2019, 7 in 2018, 10 in 2017.
All injured.
It was always a hammy, I'm pretty sure, for the most part. So did the PEDs keep him healthy, make him a better player? There's some red flags there. But again, he was going off last year. He was arguably the most reliable wide receiver in fantasy football. And right now, he's going off the board as wide receiver 27 in best ball. So that caution is out there.
Oh, for sure.
It is. And you mentioned all the wide receiver needy teams, but ones that you didn't mention, I think the Packers and the Cardinals are also in the market for a wide receiver.
Well, Packers for sure. I don't know about the Cardinals, but you're absolutely right. Green Bay should have been in that list.
But if Christian Kirk leaves, you know, the Texans love shipping, or the Cardinals love receiving Texans over from Houston, J.J. Watt, DeAndre Hopkins, and the like. But, man, Fuller, he seems about right where he's at. I'm not fully on board with him staying healthy for a full 16-game season without the help of PEDs. I know that it was an honest mistake. I'm not going to throw him under the bus too much, but I think his value is right about right in redraft at 27th, and you got to bump it up a little bit in a dynasty, but I'm just not sold he's a every week player that you can rely on.
You know where I'd like him to go? I want his landing spot to be wherever Deshaun Watson is. How about that? You know, if Watson stays in Houston, I'd like Will Fuller to sign with his original team.
Actually, we don't want him to go to Arizona because Hopkins is there, and Hopkins always sapped his talent outside of his own hamstrings. Let's keep him and Hopkins away from each other.
I agree.
They're probably buddies, but they don't need to play together anymore.
Next up, Marvin Jones. He got a lot of extra volume due to Kenny Galladay's mostly missed season last year, and he saw career highs in targets and receptions last season. But even with all that, Brian, Marvin Jones didn't crack 1,000 yards despite being the go-to receiver in, you know, for at least 12 games. And here's an interesting stat that I came across. I believe he's the only wide receiver with 9 or more touchdowns in 3 of the past 4 seasons, which is pretty shocking. He finished last year as wide receiver 15. Not bad for Marvin Jones. Ideal landing spot for Marvin Jones, any team where he doesn't have to be the top receiver. Unlike Fuller and Galladay that have proven they can be a top receiver, Marvin Jones can't. It's just, you know, he had good quarterbacking for Matthew Stafford and wasn't able to get to 1,000 yards last season. I don't think he's a number one. He feels like a number two. So then he could go to Baltimore behind Hollywood Brown. He could go to Chicago behind Allen Robinson, Miami behind Parker, the Giants behind Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton, Tennessee behind A.J. Brown, Washington behind McLaurin. I'd like to see him be a regular number two, he was for Kenny Galladay.
What about Green Bay? Alongside
Green Bay, Green Bay, Devontae Adams, perfect.
I love the double revenge game angle for any player.
Marvin Jones' redraft value is medium low, I think, unless he falls into a perfect spot, and his dynasty value is low. He's a 31-year-old and he's entering his 10th season, and you forget he played 4 years for Cincinnati that we don't even remember anymore. I don't think it was John Kitna throwing him the ball or something at this point, but yeah,
Scott Mitchell maybe even known. Not that old.
Scott Mitchell was Detroit. Did he finish his career in Cincinnati? And I forgot.
I thought we were talking about Detroit quarterback still there.
Oh, no, I was talking about Cincinnati.
Well, Kitna's crossover, too.
Yeah, he did. That's how you got mixed up. That's how your wires got crossed right there. All right, talk to us about Antonio Brown. It sounds like he'd like to stay in Tampa.
You would think he would want to stay in Tampa because I'm not convinced he can keep his head on straight without sharing bunk beds with Tom Brady. Tom Brady keeping him in line, even though Tom Brady's kind of like a drunk uncle right about now. But, Antonio Brown turns 33 in July, so he's more than he's in the twilight of his career.
For sure.
For lack of better terms.
Did you see a single play last year that you would describe as like, you know, game breaking, like Antonio Brown used to be in his prime?
Not necessarily, but he did turn it on towards the end of the year, though. Here's a random stat, though. Most games with 10 plus catches in NFL history, Antonio Brown with the most, 22, with Andre Johnson. 22,
okay.
Who never had a competent quarterback basically his entire career.
No.
But more pertinent to fantasy football, last year in PPR points per snap, so this is essentially based on how much you play, right? Mm-hmm. How many points you produce per snap. Devontae Adams was first at 0.48 PPR points per snap.
God, that's a lot on a per snap basis. Jeez.
And then number two, Antonio Brown.
Really?
0.39, right ahead of Tyreek Hill. So, I mean, Brown didn't come into play until week 7, week 8 when Tampa Bay signed him. Took some time to get ramped up. But, again, as the season wore on, he looked great. That helped with Mike Evans being hurt a little bit late in the season. But Brown looked good. But I'm not interested in him unless he stays in Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. I think he's got to stay there.
I'm with you.
I think Baltimore and Miami are just my gut. Like, those are places he could end up. I could see them taking a flyer on Antonio Brown.
I don't think
Brown.
John Harbaugh put up with him.
Probably not. Yeah, the Dolphins maybe keep him in Florida, but right now...
Antonio Brown on South Beach sounds like a bad combo.
Yeah, it does, especially with the Dolphins. But right now, Brown, his redraft value, he's going around wide receiver 45. You're drafting him as a wide receiver 3 with upside. He's kind of more of a best ball play. And when it comes to dynasty, he has value, but not in a startup. If I'm doing a startup draft, I'm not drafting Antonio Brown anywhere. He's a wide receiver three reserve player for a contender in dynasty, for in an existing league, of course.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, some of the other wide receivers and tight ends available in free agency. As I mentioned, deep, deep pool. We still got guys like Juju Smith-Schuster and Curtis Samuel to talk about, and that's just at the wide receiver position. Stay tuned for more Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchian and Brian Johnson with you. You can follow us on Twitter, at Paul Charchian, at BTXJ. Continuing with the wide receiver free agents, Brian, Corey Davis finished as wide receiver 29. He was an all-or-nothing fantasy producer who generally fared well against bad defenses, struggled against most of the rest of the league. He crushed Jacksonville, Detroit, Cincinnati, Cleveland. His big games were not connected to A.J. Brown's health, which was interesting. Mm. You know, you might have thought, you know, when A.J. Brown was there, he either did really well with A.J. Brown because Brown was sucking up all the big, you know, all the best coverage, or maybe he would do better with A.J. Brown. It turns out it didn't really matter. Pro Football Focus loved Corey Davis. They ranked him as the eighth highest. They graded him eighth highest. Wide receiver eight by Pro Football Focus.
Wow.
Immediately behind DeAndre Hopkins, Allen Robinson, and Adam Thielen. Wow. That's some good company right there.
And a guy who was essentially left for dead in draft season last year. He was like a late round flyer in most leagues.
Oh, Corey undrafted.
Davis. Yeah.
Undrafted in most leagues, yes. The ideal landing spot for him, I don't think Corey Davis feels like a wide receiver one on any team. I think he's a wide receiver two. He did very little for three seasons before last year, and that's going to give people pause. And so like Marvin Jones, I think he's best suited when there's another talent on the field so he doesn't have to try to be a number one, which he isn't. Baltimore, Chicago, Green Bay, Miami, the Giants, Tennessee, Washington, all make sense. The redraft value for Corey Davis here, I think it's medium-low. But he's still only 26 years old, so in Dynasty and Empire Leagues, yeah, maybe that makes a little more sense to roll the dice on him, and I could see him going a couple of rounds higher in the Dynasty League because he is still so young.
Yeah, he probably will still remain undervalued wherever he ends up. It could blow up in your face, but he still has very high ceiling. It was not long ago he was the top wide receiver.
They were taken in the draft.
I know you went to Central Michigan, a smaller school and all that, but he was a blue-chip prospect not long ago.
Let's go to Juju Smith-Schuster. This very podcast absolutely nailed that Juju Smith-Schuster would be heading to free agency last summer. We talked about it many times, that we thought the odd man out of that crowded wide receiver room was going to be Juju Smith-Schuster, and here we are. He's headed for a free agency.
Yeah, Juju, four seasons now he has played, and he just turned 24.
That's
last
nuts.
November.
God.
Incredibly young.
Yeah. Yes.
A seasoned vet at 24 years old, a newly minted 24-year-old. And last season, it wasn't as bad as I remembered. Like, off the top of my head, I'm like, he was a huge bust. He did have some landmine games, but it wasn't as bad as I remembered, especially starting from week 9 through the wild card game, which was 10 games. Mm-hmm. He scored in 7 of those 10 games and 4 of his last 5. He became incredibly reliable. And, Pittsburgh letting him walk. And the Jets feels like the team for Juju, because I believe Jameson Crowder might be leaving.
I don't remember that.
We don't have to talk Crowder, but I don't know. All the wide receiver needy teams should be enticed by Juju, because last year, Ben Roethlisberger is in the twilight of his career too. But
yeah.
Juju is very intriguing for any wide receiver needy team. He's going to command 12 to 15 mil a year, it seems. So, like, you're going to need cap space to land
Juju.
I
would not pay him that much.
But
I wouldn't. But maybe some team will. It'll be fascinating to see where he goes. You know, he's a pure slot receiver, so that really changes the window of the teams that could end up going after Juju Smith-Schuster.
And right now in redraft, he's like wide receiver 30. He's going after guys like Tyler Boyd, Will Fuller, who we talked about earlier, Cooper Kupp, Brandon Ayuk. And granted, those guys might deserve to go ahead of Juju, but he's still in that range where he can outlive that ADP. And I don't think he's going to blow up in your face too much. He's not going to bottom out entirely. So I like his value in redraft and in dynasty.
Tennessee, right, to me, would be the perfect landing spot. So he gets Ryan Tannehill, highly competent quarterback, and they need a slot receiver. They let Adam Humphries go. That would end up being a bad free agent contract that they gave him. And, you know, maybe they try Juju Smith-Schuster. Curtis Samuel finished last year as wide receiver 25, and he's actually been sneaky productive for three seasons with 7-7 and 5 touchdowns. Last year, he set career highs in receptions, yards, rushes, and rushing yards for Curtis Samuel, and they used him more in that jackknife role where they asked Samuel to do a lot of different things, which I loved. He is a true gadget player who can be used in a wide variety of ways, generally runs his routes from the slot. But he's always been a hit or miss fantasy producer. And actually last year, looking through his game logs, his rushing production actually bailed him out of some otherwise really bad games. And so if he continues to run the ball wherever he goes, it would be fascinating to see what he could end up doing. And that does end up saving you a little bit from a fantasy standpoint. The ideal landing spot here is, I think, pretty broad. You know, Curtis Samuel's proven he doesn't have to have elite quarterbacking to be good, because he's never had elite quarterbacking. And so all you got to do is find a spot with an open slot receiver role, like Green Bay, New England, Washington, Miami, Cleveland, Baltimore, Houston, Detroit, Las Vegas. All of them have got open slot receiver spots. You know, any of those could work. I think it really just depends on the team's his fantasy value depends on the team's willingness to use him in the wide variety of ways that his skill set merits.
Yeah, that wide receiver 25 finish is impressive, considering DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson, who are playing over him, essentially, were top 24 wide receivers on a total points per game basis. So,
Redraft value for Curtis Samuel's medium low. He's unlikely to emerge as a focal point of any passing attack, in my mind. And, you know, the dynasty value is probably medium. He's still really young. He's 24 years old. And I kind of see Curtis Samuel as a back of your roster, bye week fill in guy for a long time. You know, whatever team he goes to next, you periodically start him and feel okay about it. And, you know, maybe he's got good matchups here and there and you start him. But I don't know that I'd want to have Curtis Samuel as a every week starter.
No, he seems like a guy a team is going to overpay for.
Yeah.
In the real world perspective.
Sounds right. Final wide receiver we're going to talk about, Nelson Aguilar.
Can you believe it? I didn't think we'd talk about Nelson Aguilar.
No, I thought it was done.
All last year, especially with, you know, Tyrell Williams. The Raiders had like 7 wide receivers ahead of Nelson Aguilar that you would consider more relevant.
Brian drafted one, Brian Edwards.
Yeah, Brian Edwards and Henry Ruggs is the guy I was going to mention. Henry the first Ruggs, wide receiver taken in the draft last year. But big time whoopsie there, which we've pointed out many times over the course of this show or since his tenure in the NFL. But Nelson Aguilar, 8 touchdowns last year, the 8th most among wide receivers, same amount as guys like Stephon Diggs.
Wow.
Keenan Allen, more touchdowns than guys like Justin Jefferson, DeAndre Hopkins, Allen Robinson.
Wow.
Nelson Aguilar, and only on 82 targets. That's, I mean, Stephon Diggs had like 107.
Yeah, right.
Like, so
right.
It's totally, he only had about 50 catches, 900 yards, but it's understandable that he only totaled those numbers on 82 targets. He was top 8 in average depth of targets. He just, at 15 plus yards, he just wasn't utilized a lot, and with the Raiders, and I don't know if he's going to go back to the Raiders because he essentially called them out for their the whole team for their lack of effort towards the end of the year. So,
but he was right. That's the thing.
He was right, most likely. But wherever he ends up, he's probably only going to see that same 80 to 90 target share. He's not the guy, but he moved out of the slot role where he was rotting away in Philly.
Yeah,
they use him more on the boundaries with Vegas, but this is really where he ends up. If he's the complimentary outside piece to, say, Devontae Adams in Green Bay, I'm more intrigued than if he lands with the Giants in some, you know, muddled role or something like that. But he's definitely way more of a best ball play for me. I'm not a guy I'd be targeting in redraft or dynasty. But in best ball, he's lumped in the mid-60s, which makes him a wide receiver four-ish type guy. But dynasty, I think he's peaked. Essentially, but late round flyer, more so in best ball than Nelson Aguilar.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the free agent tight ends, and there's a bunch of good ones here too. It's just a crazy year. We'll talk about the free agent tight ends who matter and where we like them to go, possible dynasty and redraft value for the free agent tight ends coming up next. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. Third segment of Fantasy Football Weekly. This is a free agent related show. We've already broken down quarterbacks and running backs last week, wide receivers last two segments. Now, the tight ends. We've got one, two, three, four guys that we want to talk about that we think are fantasy notable. There are a bunch of teams that have tight end need and money to spend. I think that looks like Arizona, Buffalo, Carolina, Cincinnati, Jacksonville, LA Chargers, New England, the Jets, Pittsburgh, Seattle, and Tennessee. All teams that have tight end need and money to spend. Let's begin with Hunter Henry. His recap last year was a little more disappointing than I had remembered it being when I went back and looked. He's been productive by tight end standards, but just really no season has he blown people away like we thought he would based on draft position, pedigree, size, athletic ability. It feels like in no season has it really all come together. If you want 600 yards and four touchdowns from your tight end, he's your guy. But 604 is mundane, honestly.
Yeah.
And you can almost stream your way to 600 yards and four touchdowns in a season. So I think now this is just who Hunter Henry is. And the fact that the Chargers didn't want to use their franchise tag on him tells you a little bit about where they how they feel about him.
He's gone. He's gone from LA.
I think so, too. The ideal landing spots to me are Arizona, that needs a tight end. We're going to talk about another Arizona tight end in a minute. He'll be teamed there with Kyler Murray. Cincinnati to team up with Joe Burrow would be great. Buffalo needs tight end help. And Josh Allen is there. And then Seattle, assuming Russell Wilson stays. Seattle always manages to put together solid tight end numbers with the Ross Dwellies of the world and, you know, a bunch of guys coming and going.
New England also needs tight end. And I remember the Chargers but and Patriots played last year, and there was almost an awkwardly long embrace between Bill Belichick and Hunter Henry.
Was there really?
Like, I'm going to be your coach next year.
Did the tampering start there?
So if I had to put money on it, I feel like he's going to the Patriots. But
no, maybe. They got money. They just don't have a quarterback.
True.
But yes, they do have a lot of money. And I listed the Patriots there. But so back to Hunter Henry just for a second here. I think the redraft value in him is pretty low. Does he get materially better in his next landing spot? I don't know. I mean, maybe because he won't have Keenan Allen soaking up balls, but he also won't have a quarterback like Justin Herbert throwing either, probably where he goes. So I don't know. I think it's medium low. He's only 26 years old, so he's got another like 4 or 5 years of solid contributions left, but that's all you get is the solid contribution and not outstanding play from Hunter Henry.
No matter where he ends up, I feel like he'll be overvalued on draft day because he's just a name that sticks in fantasy football players' minds.
He feels comfortable easy, but, and there are always guys in your league who want that. All right, let's go to, speaking of Patriots and tight ends, let's go to Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah, Rob Gronkowski, former Patriot, of course, current Buck. Well, not so current Buck, but you would think he's going to go back to Tampa, but turns 32 in May. Might be the oldest 32 in tight end history.
It is a lot of miles.
His liver is probably about 50 years old. But Gronk played in all 16 games last year. Finished tight end 7 in total points, but just 11th in points per game. He had some major landmine weeks mixed into his season.
Oh, a couple disasters.
Catch games that certainly would have killed you in a guillotine league.
Would have.
But he has to be re-signing with the Bucs. I don't see him coming back.
He doesn't play anywhere else, right?
He won't play anywhere else.
No.
So, for whatever reason he does, he's dead to me. But even if he signs with Tampa Bay, which most people are expecting, he's going off the board right around tight end 19 right now in redraft. And he's a backup.
Would you rather have Brait or would you rather have Gronkowski?
In a redraft best ball scenario, I'd still rather go
redraft
Gronk. But in Dynasty, if I'm doing a Dynasty startup, I'd probably take Brait.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, Gronk has value in a Dynasty league, but as a backup. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing a first-year draft, you just shoot for upside anywhere else outside of Gronk. We've kind of seen the best out of him. But again, he kind of came on strong towards the end of the year. He was more reliable than I expected him to be, but just pretty much avoid Gronk on draft day, though, for the most part.
All right. Now we turn our attention to two guys near and dear to our hearts.
Oh, yeah.
Jonnu and Dan Arnold.
Who loves who more? That'd be like the ultimate cage match of devotion to the tight end spot.
I got it. I think I love Janu more than you love Dan Arnold.
All right, we'll see.
I'll go first.
Okay.
So last year, you'll remember, Janu started the season on fire. Through week five, he was second only to Travis Kelce in fantasy points. And I looked freaking brilliant for 5 weeks.
Sure did.
And then, and by the way, he had 5 touchdowns through week 5. And he was averaging 7 targets and 5 catches per game. Then he suffered an ankle injury in week 6, and Janu was never the same. Yeah, I think very gallantly, he played through the injury, but they used him mostly as a blocker because he's actually a very good blocking tight end. And I think his mobility was very compromised, and that's such a big part of his game is the fact that he can run like a running back after the catch. So after that week 6 ankle injury, his usage dropped off dramatically, basically in half, 3 targets and 2 catches per game half from week 6 forward, down from, again, 7 targets and 5 catches per game. He was tight end 21 after that ankle injury.
Well, he ran like a running back in the red zone where they utilized him. He had like 2 or 3 rushing touchdowns too.
He's
like essentially the full package when it comes to a football player. Fantasy football players care about that, but yeah.
The athleticism, he is a top 5% athlete for his position. Incredibly fast. Linebackers have a nightmare matchup because of his speed and size. And, you know, I want to see Janu go to a team that will utilize him and utilize the things that make him special. The athleticism, you know, Seattle's got a history of getting great production out of nobody's at tight end. I'd like to see him teamed up with Josh Allen's big arm. That could be, because I think he can be a downfield receiver. Justin Herbert would be a great fit for downfield passing if he wants to replace Hunter Henry. Way more dynamic than Hunter Henry. So those are all some places I like. I think Janu's redraft value is middle of the pack for tight ends. With the right team, I think he'll slot in around tight end 10. In redraft leagues, you know, with the wrong team, I think he slides to like tight end 15 or 20. Dynasty value, he's still young. He's only 25 years old and has got a ton of tread on the tire after being lightly used in Tennessee. So I think his dynasty value is a little higher than that.
Now, when you said top five in terms of athleticism when it comes to tight ends, what a segue for Dan Arnold.
Oh, perfect.
Who turns 26 on Monday, March 15th.
Wow!
The day when free agency fully opens,
period starts. It's going to be a birthday,
and my guy deserves to get paid. Mm-hmm. Yes, he only finished as tight end 21 on a total points basis last year, but missed a couple games. Only saw 45 targets. Now, for reference, guys like Hunter Henry, Noah Fant, Dalton Schultz, the full time Cowboys tight end last year, Mike Gesicki. Eric Ebron all saw roughly 90 targets from like 85 to 95, those guys in that range. So if you double Dan's 45 targets into that 90 range, he would have finished with 61 catches, 880 yards, and 8 touchdowns.
Oh, that would have put him in the top 5 or so.
Top 5 comfortably among tight ends.
But you're doubling his output, is not a safe assumption.
But on a per-target basis, he was money, and there is lots to love in the underlying metrics. First among tight ends in average depth of target last year, 12.6 yards. That's like wide receiver caliber, A-dot. Ninth in yards after the catch per reception. A total force in the red zone and the end zone, more specifically. Mm-hmm. And he's still somewhat raw. He had some pretty crucial drops towards the end of last year, but I still think he can put it all together. And if he's given the 90 to 100 target, you know, workload, he can be a top 8, top 10 tight end quite easily in the right spot. And Arizona might not be the right spot. They don't utilize their tight end.
No,
as much
they
as other
never
teams.
Have. Never have.
And they still gave Max Williams adequate targets.
Money.
And even some other guy, I can't remember his name, caught a couple touchdowns for the Cardinals or third string tight end. So tight end 36 right now for Dan Arnold in redraft basketball. Lot of appeal for me at that price, especially in dynasty leagues. If you land, like, the one team we didn't mention that has a gaping hole at tight end, the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah. Yep. Don't even know who their quarterback's going to be, but Carolina may end up with a really good quarterback, either through the draft, because they're drafting, you know, they're moving, their draft position would make that possible, or maybe there's a lot of rumors they're going to do something splashy at that position. Maybe they pull off a trade. Maybe they get Deshaun Watson. Who knows?
And we should say this might be one of the deeper tight end classes when it comes to the NFL draft too. We'll talk about that in future weeks.
Yeah, Kyle Pitts is Kyle. If you said, Charge, right now, you have to name one player out of this year's draft to go to the Hall of Fame. Kyle Pitts.
I hope you're right.
That'd be my
guy. I got him as a Devy player last year in one of my
did you really?
Dynasty leagues. It made up for Eno Benjamin being my Devy player the year before. But yeah, Kyle Pitts, I got this going into this year, so I'm feeling good about that.
Speaking of Cardinals.
But Dan Arnold, no shocker coming from me. Keep him on your radar.
So back, okay, Eno Benjamin. I don't know that we drop him quite yet.
No, I've held
in these you know big roster Devy leagues and dynasty leagues.
Yeah, I'm holding.
You know because Kenyon Drake's gone.
Yep.
Right. Eno Benjamin and a lot of running backs. It takes 2 years. A 2 year window on running backs. I don't mind that he got basically no work in year one. I wonder if he is not a regular change of pace player this year. If he isn't basically this year's Chase Edmonds, and Chase Edmonds is now the lead back.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Drake likely gone, and if they don't draft another running back unless it's like way late in the draft or sign, they're not going to sign Mark Ingram, we know that. But yeah, you know, Benjamin, there's still a pulse there for sure. Even though I wish I didn't drop Lynn Bowden in favor of Eno Benjamin, the tiebreaker was, Eno was my Devy player. And this is before the Dolphins release. This is like week four, week five. But yeah. I'm regretting holding on to Eno over Lynn Bowden right about now.
Well,
or Bowden. Is it Bowden or Bowden?
It doesn't. I don't think he looks. Is there anything about Lynn Bowden that makes you feel like you really missed the boat on him?
No, at least he was playing football last year, though.
That's it, yeah.
But, yeah. I like the Eno Benjamin close. That's a. It's about as heady as it gets for a tight end wide receiver podcast. We're talking Eno Benjamin.
I know. You know it's the offseason. Thank you. Speaking of which, thank you for listening. Got to the end of the podcast. Some, I don't know, whatever, 30, 40-ish minutes into the podcast. Thank you for checking us out, as always, and subscribing to the podcast, rating, reviewing the podcast. Always grateful for your feedback as well. We'll be back next week for more Fantasy Football Weekly.
Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.